Hello and welcome back to Multiform at Xbox Podcast. Every week we get together to talk about the news, rumors, and the games we've been playing. This is episode 101. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by Spencer Rain.
Oh, are you joined by Spencer?
Oh, wow.
Rest in peace.
I know. It's just a habit at this point. I knew he was gone. We just talked about it. This week I'm joined by Gus Harden.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah, Spencer got married 2 days ago, and he is off on his honeymoon, so he is not joining us. I can't believe I said his name after we just talked about him being gone.
Yeah, we literally said, you're like, hopefully I don't mess up the intro.
Yeah, well, I did.
Did such a good job, and then you got to the end.
I would say Spencer has missed episodes before, because when he was doing his law bar exam and studying for the bar, he missed a few. I guess the other thing I should throw out this week is, after Spencer's wedding, I've had a cold, and plus all the yelling and screaming and dancing at the wedding, so my voice is a little rough this week, so apologies for that.
You're fine, okay. Tim.
Let's get into what we've been playing. I'll go first. So I actually beat a lot of stuff this week. Assassin's Creed Origins, I finished up all the DLC on that and cleaned up almost all of the achievements I had. The only achievement I didn't get is the one to clear everything off the map. And I really wanted to do that. Spencer has it, which just really digs into me that he has it and I don't. But in the end, I was like, man, it's going to take me another 10 or 15 hours to finish up like every little side thing. And I could spend that time playing another game off my backlog. So I just had to walk away from it with like 96% completion. But I will say Assassin's Creed Origins has rocketed to the top of my favorite Assassin's Creed games list. One of the other games I played this week was Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I jumped right into that after beating Origins, and I almost miss Origins in a way, because Odyssey, I don't know why, ancient Greece to me isn't as interesting as ancient Egypt. And there's some changes to the game but I'm still early, so it's too early to say whether I like Odyssey as much as Origins. But Origins is probably up there in top three or four Assassin's Creed games for me. And I feel like we talk about Assassin's Creed all the time on the show, and we're actually going to talk about it more because Ubisoft revealed new details about Valhalla. So I'll put a pin in that for now. And then the other thing I played this week is I finished The Last of Us Part Two. I ended up, my playtime was almost exactly 30 hours. I think I was like 29 hours and 49 minutes or something. So I was right at 30 hours. And that's another one where I didn't have a whole lot left to do to clean up and get the platinum trophy. But I, again, just decided to walk away, at least for now, because I have so many other games to play. And I'm trying to prioritize games that I haven't completed that have sequels coming out in the next 12 months. So games like Hellblade, I'm about halfway through Hellblade, so I want to finish that up. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I want to play a lot of that. And a few others that we'll talk about later that got announced. So I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey will probably be the main game I'm playing right now. That and Hellblade are the two I'm trying to get through. So what have you been playing?
I've been playing a little bit more Halo Wars 2 because it is on Game Pass. But with all of the wedding stuff going on this week and just it being kind of a hectic week in general for me, I haven't really played very much Xbox at all. I've still been playing World of Warships. I've spent most of the time that I have free time to play video games, I've still just been playing Hearts of Iron 4. So not really an Xbox game, but still a game that I enjoy playing nonetheless. So pretty quiet week for me.
You know, you mentioning Hearts of Iron, it being a PC game, actually gave me, reminded me of something else. So I was just talking to my wife, and I'm thinking about building a desktop PC from scratch myself while I'm furloughed and have free time to do something like that. So I'm just trying to decide what my budget is going to be for how much I'm willing to spend. Obviously, I can upgrade some things later, but I'm prioritizing things like the GPU and the things that'll matter. But anyway, so that's something I might kind of be working through in the future. And since Game Pass is on PC, there's a lot of games that I could be playing on PC that I don't really take full advantage of with my Game Pass Ultimate subscription. So it'd be nice to have a better PC. My current PC is an i5 with a GeForce 960 graphics card. So it's several generations old and it barely runs, you know, it's slightly better than a 360 level GPU, basically. So, okay, well, let's move on to some news. The big news this week is Ubisoft Forward, their E3 substitute event, happened just today as we record. It's Sunday. We decided to hold off and record after Ubisoft's event since that was going to be the big news of the week. And we did get a lot of updates from Ubisoft Forward. So I've kind of broken it down into the five or six games that Spencer, Gus, and I care about the most. And then we'll also talk about what was absent and that we know about that was kind of obviously absent and kind of weird that it wasn't there in some instances. So the first thing I want to talk about is in the pre-show, they brought up Ghost Recon is getting a new update on July 15th, which is 3 days from now, 2 days from now as this releases on podcasts. And it's the Ghost Recon Breakpoint update that adds AI squad mates finally. I mean, I feel like we've been talking about that for almost a year and a half.
Yeah, that was like one of my biggest gripes about that particular game was that I didn't have the squad mates anymore. The AI squad mates were such a huge part of Wildlands and what makes the game, to me, more playable when you're playing solo was being able to have those AI squad mates because having like the sync shot was like such a huge part of being able to play the game and like play it effectively and not having that option and having to worry about having drones or whatever was just kind of weird to me. It didn't really make sense I guess it kind of made sense why they chose to not have the AI squad mates because it's like they're really trying to get people to play with each other rather than having everybody just play solo. I don't know, maybe they thought that by not having AI squad mates that people would be telling their friends to buy the game so they could play it with them as a like kind of like a ploy to boost sales, but I don't think it didn't really work out well for them. I've always been kind of a mind because I didn't have Xbox Live for a long time when I originally got my Xbox, and so to me, like having to rely upon online components has always kind of turned me off. I like being able to just play games like by myself and not having to worry about playing it with other people to be able to have fun. And that was always, that was like my number one gripe with Breakpoint was that they just eliminated the AI squad mates.
Yeah, I think for me, when a game is a single player story based game or even not just a story based game, I don't like co-op being baked into the game at such a level that it's required. To me, co-op should always be something that's optional that you can do if you want, but not required to enjoy the game to its fullest. So like I can play through the Halo story solo and enjoy it in its entirety. But if I want to play co-op and have someone do split screen or over online through Master Chief Collection join me, that's an added bonus. Same thing with Gears of War. You can play the entire game solo, but if somebody wants to join you, they can. For them to make co-op a core pillar, there's very few games that have made that work. And the only ones that have been like indie games like A Way Out, that prison break game that was the game had to be played in co-op. And even then you're limiting the potential of your audience because a lot of people want to play a story-based game solo. And when they think of multiplayer or co-op, there's usually that mode as an option additive on top of the single player mode. So to make that the primary mode was always annoying to me. And I told you this story before we went on the air. When I went back after they did the update where they totally overhauled the game a few months ago, I went back and played it and I got deep into this enemy outpost and then got killed by some high armor enemy. And it put me all the way back on the outskirts and I had to fight my way through everybody that I had already taken out. I mean, like tons and tons of guys. And to me, that was a huge punishment for playing solo. Like I had spent 30 minutes meticulously sniping off all these guys and then one high level enemy comes out of nowhere, kills me, and I just lost all that progress. Whereas in Wildlands, you got one revive from your AI teammates. You didn't get infinite revives. After the first one, you would just die the second time. but it gave you that one opportunity to make a mistake and still be able to move forward. And I missed having that in Breakpoint. So hopefully it shakes out. Although I still, something just still feels off about Breakpoint. It just, they changed too much about the way the game feels from Wildlands that when I play it, I just don't enjoy it for some reason. So I'm hoping some of that magic gets brought back with this update, but I'm not super optimistic.
Yeah, it definitely did not really feel like it was a sequel to Wildlands personally. I still need to play it and beat it. I think when I got my new Xbox, I haven't even bothered to reinstall it yet. I might with the addition of the with the re-addition of the AI squad mates, but just kind of like circling back to what you said about the reviving, I think that was also like a perk too, that you would get, like you would spend like your supplies or whatever, and they would give you more opportunities like to be revived. Like I think like up to like 3 times you could go down in a mission before it would just end it and you would die.
I must have not specced into that because I only always had one, but I never invested in the skill tree for AI squad mates because it seemed silly because they were kind of useless.
Oh, I think I definitely did because I was like, man, this is really useful being able to have like squad mates be able to do stuff for me. It was mostly stuff so I could have like the sync shot cooldowns and stuff like that.
Yeah. So when Ubisoft Forward kicked off in earnest, they led off with Watch Dogs Legion, which we hadn't seen really since they delayed it, because I think it was originally supposed to come out in February or March of 2020. And after the reception of Breakpoint, they delayed a lot of the games that were planned for spring 2020. And that was one of them. And we really hadn't heard a peep since. And so it came back in a big way. They had a little short film by the director of, I think, Into the Spider-Verse, which was kind of cool. And then they confirmed a couple of new things. So it's going to support Xbox Smart Delivery. They actually had Phil Spencer on the show, and he announced Smart Delivery for Watch Dogs Legion and Ray Tracing for Watch Dogs Legion on Series X. And then he segued from Watch Dogs Legion to Assassin's Creed Valhalla. But the big reveal for Watch Dogs Legion was the October 29th release date. So we also got a release date for Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the interesting thing is they're only like 2.5 weeks apart. So we're going to go from an open world London game to a Assassin's Creed Valhalla, also set in England many years before, obviously, but only 2 weeks apart, and they're actually set near each other in just in different time periods. So that's really interesting that they chose to put those two games so close together.
Yeah, that is kind of odd.
I know Watch Dogs has never really moved the needle for you or Spencer. I always thought it had huge potential, and I really loved the first game. And one of the coolest things about it is how realistic the recreations of the cities are. Exploring San Francisco, Chicago, and now London. They did show in their gameplay that the villain headquarters that you're taking on is in the Tower of London, which Spencer and I actually had the opportunity to visit about a year and a half ago. So it's kind of cool that we will be able to visit a lot of places that we went to in London. It's funny because Spencer and I have gone on several vacations together over the years, and we've been to, I think, San Francisco, Chicago, and London, all three together, which are the settings of all three of the Watch Dogs games. So that's kind of just an interesting aside.
Yeah, I think I remember you talking to me about that because I went to Chicago with you guys for Thanksgiving, and I that was like right after the first Watch Dogs had come out, and I know you were talking to me about how you like had seen all the same places in Watch Dogs.
Yeah, and Legion's a little different because it's set, I think, in a near future post-Brexit where like it's kind of descended into anarchy and everything's a little futuristic and the cars are all like spaceships and stuff, or spaceship looking. But still, like the Tower of London and the Tower Bridge were exactly like you remember them, except for the addition of this fake corporation that's trying to take over the city. I'm a little more interested in Watch Dogs Legion, but the whole like take control of anybody aspect of it, despite it being a cool technological feature, it kind of seems like a gimmick to me. It kind of reeks of what was it, Driver San Francisco, where you could take control of any car by beaming into the mind of the person driving it. It could be cool. I'm going to play it. I know I'm going to play it because I just love Ubisoft open world games, but I don't know. It's not high up on my priority list when you have this Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Cyberpunk 2077 all coming out at this, you know, within 3 weeks of each other. It's probably going to be my third game that I end up beating among those three. So.
Sweet. Yeah. Watch Dogs, like you said, never really did a whole lot for me. I did think the idea was cool though. Like I thought the first game looked really interesting, with like all the technology behind it, I thought was really cool. It reminded me of some other game, but I can't think of what it was right now.
Yeah. It also seems to me a little bit that it struggles with its identity because the games are so different. Like the first game was a really bleak story about a hacker. The second game is this like comical, over the top, like dude bro culture game, and it's still about hacking, but it's way less serious. And then now this third game, we're set near future, so it's, you know, a little more sci-fi, and it's more like the first game in that it's bleaker, but it's also set in this like not apocalyptic, but you know what I mean, it's like anarchy in the streets and society is broken down, and I don't know. It's just a weird franchise. I don't think it sells as well as like Assassin's Creed or Far Cry. So I guess they can take more risks with it. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm interested in the game enough to buy it, obviously. It's just, it's never going to compare to Assassin's Creed in my mind, I guess. But I think I'm going around the same idea over and over again. So let me jump to the next game. This one, I'm not sure if it's coming to Xbox. It's Hyperscape. This is the new Battle Royale that they did the technical test on PC last week. I was able to play that. And then they, along with this Ubisoft Forward, they announced that the open beta is now live on PC for everyone. I think it's for like the next week or two. What they did not announce if it would be coming to console this fall. That is heavily rumored, but they didn't actually mention any release date at all, even for PC. Basically, all they did was show kind of the backstory of the Battle Royale and the narrative behind the game, and they showed some gameplay and some things like that, and then they announced the beta. And besides that, we don't know anything. We don't know when the official launch is. We don't know what the platforms are. I think it'll be a real shame if the launch platform is just PC. It's another reason why I need to build a better PC, because I would like to play this game. But I really hope it's coming to Xbox One and Series X before the end of the year, because it is fun. I've played it on PC, and it is a cool take on Battle Royale. And again, I know I'm the only Battle Royale player on this this podcast. You and Spencer are much more standard multiplayer, like first-person shooter types. But I'm definitely going to check it out. So I hope it does come to Xbox, though.
Yeah.
Next up was Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So we had that quote unquote gameplay reveal that they did at the Xbox event a month and a half ago. This was a full blowout though. So we got actual gameplay and we got a lot of it. I mean, they showed multiple trailers, and then after the show, they had a post show with additional details about the game. So I pulled out a couple of things that we didn't previously know about the game for us to kind of hone in on. The first one is you can change your gender whenever you want, and this is part of a new Animus system where they're embracing the sci-fi nature of the Animus, and they're basically upgrading it in the lore to where you can control your avatar in the Animus at any point. So basically, even though you're experiencing the memories in history, you're still experiencing them through the Animus, so the Animus can control what your avatar looks like, just like any video game. So they said you can flip back and forth between male and female, and it doesn't change the story. And you can also, there'll be points in the game where they're trying to bring the present day story and the past story together. So Layla, your present day character, will be trying to investigate something in the past. And so she will actually enter the game in the past setting as herself, as an avatar, to solve some sort of puzzle and uncover some information before being kicked out of the game. So they're creating new ways to like tie the present day to the past. And I think it's really cool that they're just letting you swap genders on the fly, because it means you won't be locked in. You can play half the game as a male and half the game as a female. And that way you get to experience kind of both voice actors, so you're not missing out on half right. of the voice acting.
Yeah, that's something that I always kind of forget is like a thing, that you're even in the Animus. I was just like, it just always just kind of like goes past me that I'm in the Animus, like now, like, cause it's like, it's almost like I'm so used to it, that it just doesn't really register to me. And you mentioning that, they're embracing the, like the Animus itself and the, how it's like, you're not actually living in, like, it's not like a, I mean, yeah, it's a history piece. It's a set piece, but you're still inside of a computer. And so you should be able to kind of just like change what you look like whenever you want. It kind of brings me back to those the memes that you see where it's like whenever your custom character enters a cutscene. I think those are hysterical. But yeah, having the ability to change your gender, like you said, it allows you to experience both voice actors without having to worry about starting a whole new game. You can keep your progress, and you can just kind of change whatever you look like. They had started to kind of like go that direction. I noticed with like the last couple games with certain special outfits that you could have. Some of them were like, one of them was like the soldier, like the Templar soldiers or whatever. You could look like the present day Templar mm-hmm. guys. Like you could get that outfit to wear as Cassandra or Alexios. So I know that they had been kind of experimenting with it. And it
makes about as much sense as me riding a purple Pegasus in Odyssey, which is right. what I'm currently riding. Like that obviously didn't exist. That's a lore based thing that yeah. the Animus is creating in the game. It's not yeah. actually there.
It's one of like the things that I actually spent money on. I was like, man, this is the only thing that I really want from the Helix credit, the Helix store or whatever. And I bought the Dionysian bowl. And so that's like my mount is just like a massive bowl with like huge horns. And I just think it's hysterical riding that thing around. So
I think
it's cool that they're allowing you to be able to choose whichever gender you want during like mid game.
I think the ultimate crossover between the present day and the historical setting of Assassin's Creed. So there was one of the Assassin's Creed games where you did something in the past, and then as I think it was what was the guy's name up through Assassin's Creed 3 that who was the present day guy? Why can't I remember his name?
Oh, Desmond Miles.
Yeah, Desmond. There was it. So I think it was in Assassin's Creed 3. There was a mission where you had to go somewhere in the present day into like a tomb that you had seen. The character in the past put the Apple of Eden or one of the artifacts in this place, and then as Desmond, you had to go and retrieve it.
Yeah, so I think the ultimate like the crossover effect was the yeah. thing that they had.
So the ultimate crossover would be for an Assassin's Creed game to be 50-50, where you're literally playing the historical, I don't know, pick a city that has a present day and a historical setting, I don't know, yeah. Paris or something. Or Rome. Do Rome again, and you play a story in past Rome, but you're also playing a story in present day Rome yeah. in parallel that
yeah,
they
that's,
two
that's
intertwine.
What they did. Yeah. With the Desmond Miles arc. I think
well, but I'm talking about the entire present day being an open world. Oh, like the whole city is open.
I think I've talked to Spencer about that before and like how that would work and how it, like, yeah, it would be kind of cool, but that's like not what Assassin's Creed is. Like they're more there to embrace the history. And it wants
true.
To fully immerse you in that time period. But not to say that I don't think that is a bad idea. And they did it a lot in Brotherhood. I think Brotherhood, you got the most outside of the Animus like action, because at that point, that was the fourth game, I think. And it was the
third game.
Brotherhood was Brotherhood. Yeah. Yeah. It was the third game. You're right. So yeah, Brotherhood was like the third game. And then, by that point, like, cause the first two games, Desmond's like, I don't know what's going on. And then the bleeding effect finally kind of like takes, charge, and he's able to actually like start like doing like the parkour that the assassins mm-hmm. do. And then, cause he's,
yeah,
the,
I remember
the
he starts to like feel their abilities.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you can all like see them like running around or whatever. Cause the, like, it's like, it's starting to like mess with his mind, which I thought was really cool. And I think that it's really dumb that they've advanced the Animus to like a point where it's like, you don't have to worry about that as much. I thought that was like a very interesting, I guess, side effect of using the Animus. Then something that I kind of wish they would get back to.
I will say Desmond, I like Layla a lot more than the starting with Black Flag up through Syndicate. You had a first person and you were an Abstergo employee.
Yeah.
I really hated that. That was really boring.
I liked Desmond a lot. I was kind of surprised, not super surprised, when they killed him off at the end of Assassin's Creed 3. Because, I mean, he had been the outside protagonist, because it's funny because Assassin's Creed 3 was like the fifth game. Yeah, because you had 1, 2, Brotherhood, Revelations 3, and that was like then to like end the trilogy, I guess. They killed him off, which, oh, spoiler alert, I just realized, but whatever. I just haven't quite gotten into Layla nearly as much as Desmond. I thought Desmond's story was a lot more. They dove into it a lot more, I think, is what it was. You hardly even see Layla. You see her at like the beginning of the game and at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And then like a couple times throughout, like at the end of like chapters or acts or whatever of the last couple games, you've seen her. And she played a big part in the Fate of Atlantis DLC, which you'll get to, and to kind of understand that. But I don't know how I feel about them going present day. I think it would be fine, but you can tell that they've really cut back on it ever since.
Yeah, they really have. And it's interesting that with Valhalla, they're bringing Layla into the past because the past is where all the fun is. So I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I think most of the stuff with the Fate of Atlantis is like ties into present day. So like you understand like why that actually matters. I think with the Curse of the Pharaohs was just like it didn't have like anything to do with present day. I don't think.
No, I don't think it did either.
But Fate of Atlantis definitely does. Cause I think Layla was trying to find something, some sort of piece of Eden, I think is what it is. I haven't played it in a while though.
So the next change that I noted that was kind of a weird thing is they're bringing back the Benjamin Franklin's papers floating through the air that you chase with, you know, parkour through the air, chasing a piece of paper. It was in Black Flag, you had to chase the notes for the songs. That's how you unlocked the new sea shanties.
Right.
In 3, you had to chase Ben Franklin's notes. And I think Syndicate might have had it, but it was different a little bit. And I can't remember.
Before that, it was like flags and feathers. Yeah.
So they're bringing back the chasing a piece of paper, and it's going to be tattoos. So when you catch the whatever it looks like, I don't know if it looks like a page or what, but they showed gameplay of it. You'll be doing parkour challenges to chase down unlocking new tattoos to put on Ivor's body, like the tattoo customization system.
Are the tattoos, are they just cosmetic? I can't remember if they said that they're...
Yeah, they're okay, just cool. Cosmetic.
Okay, got it. Because I was sure it was going to be like the Tatao from Far Cry 3, where it's like it would imbue you with perks.
So I think it's interesting to... Like, unlocking sea shanties was cool to do that way, and I guess tattoos is fine. The only thing is, it's kind of annoying. Like, parkour challenges to chase a floating piece of paper.
Oh, it's kind of... Spencer's least favorite thing was like the races that you had to do. I think those are awful.
Yeah, because I mean, it inevitably you just get hung up on the parkour not going the way you want it to, and the parkour system, granted, was a lot worse way back then. But okay, so here's the last one. The big change that I noted is the biggest, and it's the health system is no longer based on regeneration. So they're going to basically a healing based system, where you have to use food and things in your inventory that you've harvested or caught to heal yourself. So there no longer will be like get out of combat and it heals you back up most of the way or all the way. You'll now have to like harvest plants, animals, and things and keep them in your inventory and use those as like health packs, which it could be fine as long as like if they add the food spoiling and you have to throw it away every so often, like Fallout, I'm going to lose my mind. But if it just means that I have to store up a couple, you know, deer carcasses and cook them or something and keep a bunch of those in my inventory, that's not the end of the world. But it is kind of annoying. I don't know why you would add this. It doesn't really make the game any more fun. It just creates some more busy work that I have to do.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Also, earlier when we were talking about being able to switch it male and female on the fly, I was actually thinking the reason it's necessary for that to be on the fly is when a game's 15 hours, 20 hours long, switching and playing a second playthrough on New Game Plus with a different gender or a different character is one thing. But when your games are 100, 120 yeah. hours long, switching to play again, you're probably going to take a break unless that's the only game that you're going to play for a while. And I'm certainly not going to play 250 hours of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So I really like that. It allows me to experience it both ways without having to do two playthroughs.
Yeah. Cause I started an Alexios playthrough cause Cassandra was my original character in Odyssey. And I think I made it like 15 minutes into the game again, as Alexios before I was just like, yeah, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, and yeah, I'm playing as Cassandra mostly because, I mean, this is what, the 11th mainline Assassin's Creed game?
Well, I think her voice actress is better anyway.
Well, I did it because there's been 11 games and I've only played as a female protagonist in half of Syndicate. So I'm just like tired of playing as the same like generic dude.
Sick and tired of looking at a dude's butt the whole time.
Well, I mean, no, I don't look at their butt, but I just wanted some diversity, I guess, in my characters. Like it feels like besides Tomb Raider and a couple other mainline franchises, we're just always playing as the same like generic muscular dude.
Yeah.
And I like Adewale was a really cool character and he got that spinoff Assassin's Creed game.
Right.
So he was really interesting and he had a really interesting backstory. And I don't know. I just, even though like diversity,
tired
is something
playing
that,
as the cookie cutter protagonist.
Yeah, it's like the infamous BioShock 3. The publisher wanted them to put Booker on the cover, and they wanted to put Elizabeth on the cover, and so they ended up with Booker on the cover with Elizabeth in the background. And the publisher, I believe, was noted as saying, "Like games don't sell with females on the cover, so we need to put Booker on the cover no matter what." And I'm like,
all right.
I, that may be true. I don't know the sales numbers, but it shouldn't be true. Like it's fun to play as a lot of different people, and that's part of the thing about being a video game is I'm a guy. I am never going to be able to put myself in Adewale's shoes or Cassandra's shoes. Like those are different experiences than my own. And that's the whole point of video games is getting outside my own bubble and experiencing other things. Yeah. So
we're here to play as people who aren't us.
Essentially. Yeah. So, and I mean, let's just be fair. A lot of games just have generic white dudes as the protagonist. Anyway, the final big thing was the release date, November 17th. So like I said earlier, we got Watch Dogs October 29th. And basically 3 weeks later, Assassin's Creed on November 17th, which is interesting because 2 days later is Cyberpunk on November 19th. So we'll have three giant open world games out basically by that time. And Cyberpunk will probably demand most of the time, but Valhalla is a notable title. I mean, that's a big game. A lot of people buy Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah, Valhalla is going to be one of the games that I buy this year, so I can promise you that.
Are you getting Cyberpunk and Valhalla?
Yeah, I'll be getting both.
Yeah, I am too. I bet I will probably be playing Cyberpunk more initially until I get deep into it.
It'll be because it's like a newer experience, I think, for me. Assassin's Creed Valhalla will just be, it's another Assassin's Creed, but it's not like something. It's not like I haven't seen anything like it before.
Yeah, and CD Projekt Red games come every like 5 years. It's like Rockstar; you only get a Grand Theft Auto every so often, and you're gonna get out of the way of whatever else you're playing for Red Dead Redemption or Grand Theft Auto.
Yep.
So they closed out the show with a one more thing moment. They had the president, or I think he's president and CEO, Yves Guillemot. He said, "Oh, one more thing," and it was Far Cry 6, which had leaked a couple days prior. It was a cinematic trailer. Juan Carlito, what's his last name?
Esposito.
Esposito. He's playing the villain and his son, and he's a dictator. We're going back to the tropical islands. It's a fictional island called Yara, and it's inspired by Cuba.
Don't they mention Yara at some point? And like, I feel like it was like a offhand like word or something in Far Cry 5. Like, you would read about it in the lore. or something.
That could be.
I feel like I've heard Yara before, but I might also just be thinking of Yara from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. The chick.
Yara is inspired by Cuba. They did all their recon and their reference material from Cuba, and you're basically going to be living out a revolution of this Yara, Cuba-inspired island. Juan Carlito is the villain, and you can play as male or female, which you could do in 5. You kind of customize your protagonist. I'm really excited because I'm a huge Far Cry fan, but yeah. Far Cry 4 and Far Cry 5 were not set on tropical islands the way 3 was, and 3 was always my favorite. So I'm excited that this will be, at least in that regard, closer to Far Cry 3 than the more recent games.
Yeah, that's the thing with Far Cry, is that it's like back like in the past, like their original thing was like the destinations were like, they're like exotic destinations.
Yeah,
and then when you had 4 was like, it was still kind of exotic because it's like you're in Asia, but 5, it's like you're
the Himalayas.
Yeah, it's like something like that. And then in 5, you're just in Montana, which I still think Far Cry 5, as it's kind of like had time to sit, I enjoyed playing it. Like at the beginning, I was kind of like, this is kind of like whatever. But I played the whole thing. I didn't get any of the DLCs or anything, but I thought like the base game had a pretty compelling story. I thought it was a really interesting take on I guess Middle America and with the Far Cry kind of taste to it. I thought was pretty good. I thought Bliss was like kind of a cool add-on in there, and the survivalist bunkers I thought were incredibly interesting. So I am happy to see that they're kind of going back to like the exotic, lush, like jungle that I feel like Far Cry is like most known for.
Yeah, and I think there could be some cool stuff with Cuba has a very interesting car culture, so the cars
they're like 50s and 60s.
Yeah, so that could be really cool. Also, it's just being down in that part of the world, the heat and the look of the sky and the water, it's just it lends itself to a lot more
the Caribbean
visual diversity than the forests of Montana. I mean, they did that they could to diversify it, and like you said, there was a lot of really cool ideas in Far Cry 5, so I'm really excited to see how they take that gameplay and apply it to this setting.
I forgot to say
Assassin's Creed Valhalla has fishing. You can throw a line out to catch fish.
I saw it out there. Yeah, you can catch fish to eat and stuff. I'm excited to be able to get back to like the water aspect, because like you said, Far Cry 3 was like on a tropical island, and I'm glad that now it seems like we'll probably get the chance again to be like swimming and have to worry about sharks and like undersea wrecks or whatever that I'm guarantee you are going to be in the game just as extra flavor and spice to the lore.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see how they do that. I'll be disappointed if they don't, but I'm sure that they will.
So I was really disappointed in Far Cry New Dawn, which I have, but haven't completed. But what I've played of it so far, it was kind of a huge letdown. And some of the things they did with gun customization and the weird tiers of those, I'm not a really big fan of, and the way they did resource management. So they announced a release date for Far Cry 6. It's coming February 18th, which is interesting because Spencer many times has said he thinks it's a mistake for Ubisoft to put out Watch Dogs, Far Cry, and Assassin's Creed all really close to each other. But that's exactly what they're doing. They're putting out 3 open world games within 5 months, and 2 of them are only 2 weeks apart, which is a risk. But that means I'd like to finish Far Cry New Dawn by February, because I want to have kind of that history of playing all the previous Far Cry games before I experience the new one to kind of like ground. And I like to catch up on the past of a franchise before I played the new entry. So that means I added the Far Cry New Dawn back to my backlog list.
I think, I don't know if I would necessarily call it a mistake for them to do it. The thing is that all of the IPs that they're releasing are pretty much like, you know what you're getting. And so I feel like if people like all of these games, they're going to buy them and they're going to play them. But I don't like you're, but then you're just going to have the people who are like, oh, well, I wasn't going to buy Far Cry 5 or Far Cry 6 anyway, just because it's not like the kind of game that I usually play. So it coming out so close to Valhalla doesn't matter to me. And then you have vice versa, the people who may not play Assassin's Creed ever at all. And so instead, they won't have to worry about it because they're just going to get Far Cry 6 later on.
Yeah, and I guess that's another good point is, yeah. I mean, Far Cry 6 could easily get delayed. Like, they put a February date on it, but depending on how the fall goes, they could easily bump that back to March, April, May. Yeah,
like, this is technically, the seventh installment of Far Cry, seventh or eighth, and then for Assassin's Creed, this is, like, the 13th or 12th.
Yeah, so I think it's 12 for Assassin's Creed mainline. Yeah, and Far Cry, you're right, it is 8 because they've had 5 numbered entries. Primal. Well, no, wait. We forgot about
New Dawn.
Blood Dragon.
It was so Blood Dragon. 9. I thought Blood Dragon was a DLC for Far Cry 3.
No, it's a standalone. It was a standalone expansion. It was the same as New Dawn. It was its own game set in the same.
Wasn't it only like $20 though?
Yeah, but New Dawn was only $40.
Right. Interesting.
And then Primal was the only full size price game. Then. But Primal was based off 4. They used the same map from 4.
Yeah.
So they've made 3 repeat map games and 5 original games. So that's 8, and then the new one will be 9.
It'll be the 9, yeah. So I think you kind of know what you're getting with these games. So I think them being launched so close to each other is, I wouldn't call it a mistake. I guess the only people that it would really hurt are the people who just quite simply can't afford to buy multiple games like that within such a short time period. Maybe they're a little bit more... money is a little bit tighter than anybody else might be, and so although they would like to be able to play all 3 of them or 2 of the 3 of them, they can only really afford to buy one at the time, so they kind of have to pick and choose. Which I could be wrong in assuming, maybe I'm living in my own world, that's not a whole lot of people, but I think I since they are kind of like tried and true IPs, you know who's going to get it and who isn't. So I don't think it really matters.
I think you make a good point. I think Assassin's Creed and Far Cry probably have really entrenched fan bases.
They're the safest games that you could launch close to each other. Now if instead of Far Cry it was a brand new IP, like that
Gods and Monsters,
is still goes along with Ubisoft's method of open world games, then you might run into a problem. Because people are like, oh, well, I want to be able to play this game, but I just don't know if I'm going to get it because it's coming out so close to this other game. I don't know. I feel like release dates with inter publisher release dates. So like people who are like the same publisher releasing different games pretty close doesn't really matter personally. But
I will say it's really smart to put Watch Dogs out before Assassin's Creed because the other way around. Like, I think Assassin's Creed swallows up the attention from Watch Dogs and people just don't even bother getting
I would agree. I would agree with that sentiment.
I mean, Watch Dogs does have a fan base. Like, I bought the first 2 games and enjoyed them, and I'll buy the 3rd one, but I'm certainly going to play it later than Assassin's Creed. And it doesn't have as much name recognition. Just it's only had 2 games, and they weren't quite as well received.
Right.
So the other thing they announced besides games in their show was they said that there would be another Ubisoft Forward coming later this year. So that means they have more stuff to announce, although you have to imagine that whatever they're announcing later either would be, they could potentially add stuff for this fall, but it's probably more likely stuff that's coming next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
And, to add on to that, let's talk about what wasn't at the show. So the 4 games that I thought of that had been previously announced that didn't even get mentioned were Rainbow Six Quarantine, which makes a lot of sense when you're in the middle of a global pandemic. Maybe don't release a game about an infestation.
Right.
Skull and Bones, the pirate game, which was demoed at E3 in 2017, and then we haven't really seen it since. So that one's kind of seemed to have gone back into the cooker for a while. And then Gods and Monsters, which was originally supposed to come out in February, March, April of 2020. And then it got delayed alongside Watch Dogs Legion. And then it The only thing we've heard about that recently is that they're going to change the name. It's not going to be called Gods and Monsters. Mm-hmm. They're going to retitle it. And otherwise, we haven't heard a peep. So I guess that one's back in the cooker. And then the longest we've gone without hearing something is Beyond Good and Evil 2, which was announced 2 years ago. And we haven't basically heard anything since. So it seems like all four of these games have gone back to the drawing board for more development, and that we probably won't hear anything until next year.
Yeah, which is fine. I know we always talk about how we seem to find ourselves with like an oversaturation of the market in games. So if they feel like they need some more work, more power to them, send them back to the drawing board for a little bit, get some extra development, get some extra work, and then release a more polished product later on. So I'm cool with that.
Yeah, all of these, none of these really pop in a huge way for me. Like Rainbow Six Quarantine, I was a little interested in. Skull and Bones, kind of the same. Gods and Monsters actually was the most interesting of all three, but we really have no information. Like, they didn't show us any gameplay. It was just, it basically looked like Fortnite graphics on an Assassin's Creed spinoff. And there was no gameplay shown, so we really don't know anything more than like the art style. So that one, the only reason I'm excited is because it has potential. I don't actually know anything about it. So, right. I mean, I'm not missing anything by these four kind of staying in development until they're ready. And if I had to say, I bet they all still release. I don't think any of them are canceled. I think they would
probably say something if they were, and they haven't yet. So,
yeah. Okay, well, let's move on from Ubisoft. And so theinformation.com put out a story this week that their sources tell them that Microsoft has been added to the list of interested parties in acquiring WB Interactive. So we talked about this last week or the week before.
It was 2 weeks ago, I think, because I wasn't on last week.
Okay, so you were on when we talked about it. So
AT&T, I thought that would be awesome if Microsoft bought Warner Brothers Studios.
Yeah, so that would include Monolith, who makes the Middle-Earth games, Rocksteady, who made the Batman trilogy, Traveler's Tales, who makes the Lego games, who I keep forgetting has the Star Wars Ultimate Lego game coming out this fall, NetherRealms, that makes Mortal Kombat and Injustice, and then several other WB studios that are just called WB Games, and then the name of the city they're in, like WB Montreal, which made Batman Origins, and the upcoming Batman game that we haven't officially had announced yet. And then there's a handful of other studios. The one that is called Avalanche that I think used to make, it's people that used to work at Disney Infinity. Mm. So it's a lot of really talented studios, particularly Monolith, Rocksteady, Traveler's Tales, NetherRealm, and WB Montreal. Those five studios have made those are some pretty really heavy hitters. Great titles.
Yeah.
The only problem is every single one of those studios is working with a licensed property that is owned by AT&T. So I think the only way this makes sense for Microsoft is if the development talent absolutely makes sense, but it has to include some sort of long-term licensing agreement.
Right.
Talking 10 or 15, maybe 20 years, where they get to use the IP that those studios are currently using and give, you know, whatever the normal licensing thing is, 10%, 20%, whatever they give back to AT&T as part of the purchase price. And then AT&T has an ongoing revenue stream from these studios even after they've sold them.
Yeah, AT&T pretty much makes out on top regardless.
Yeah, and I mean, they want the money to pay down debt that they have from becoming the monolithic company that they are from all these acquisitions. I would rather Microsoft get this than Activision or EA for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would 100% agree with that. Plus, I think it gives Microsoft the opportunity to, as bad as it sounds, because I think I bashed on exclusives. I think exclusivity is really stupid. But it gives them a chance to kind of, because people always crap on Microsoft and Xbox for only having like Halo and like Forza as like their like the big two, I guess, of the Xbox exclusivity, but this kind of gives them a chance to strike back, and maybe that they can have Batman and as the answer to Sony's Spider-Man. So, as much as I hate to say that it could bring more exclusives for Xbox, I think, should they choose to go that route, but I think it would help their drive their sales a little bit, at least.
And even if they wanted to take some of the existing franchises and keep them multi-platform,
yeah.
I mean, they've had success with that too. I mean, they publish Minecraft on every platform under the sun, and they're part of Xbox Game Studios. And same thing with Minecraft Dungeons. So
yeah, again, which is why I don't. That's why I think exclusivity is really stupid, and I don't think that game developers, or I guess Sony or Microsoft, should even do them. I think it's really dumb to me.
What would be really interesting that we're never going to know about until years from now is, you know, these studios have worked on licensed properties because they were part of WB. But when you go to bid on something like this, you get to find out, you know, what's going on behind the scenes a little bit. And maybe there's some really great new IP ideas that are at these studios that, as a part of this acquisition, you're also buying into their future opportunities. And that includes more than just sequels to existing franchises. Like at least one or two of these studios is working on something new or has ideas for something new that a big investment from Microsoft and the big backing could become the new exclusive franchise that we haven't even heard of yet.
Right. Yeah. Cause you get that new IP, and then, and even if you don't, you still get some tried and true franchises, with that, with Mortal Kombat, with the Lego games, Injustice, like all of these people, or all of these franchises, you have those as kind of like backup anyway. Those are going to be the primary money makers anyway. But if a new IP does kind of come into the works, that could be something that they kind of run with. So I agree with that.
And they already have had some pretty good relationships with these studios because if you remember, the Middle Earth game was one of the very first Xbox One enhanced games. And almost every single one of these studios has games in Xbox Game Pass right now. And what would be interesting is if these guys were acquired and it followed the pattern with all of the other studios they've acquired, all of the back catalogs for all of these studios would get added to Game Pass. So imagine all the Middle Earth games, all the Batman games, all the Lego games, all the Injustice games, all the Mortal Kombat games suddenly are in Game Pass. Some of those games are already in there right now, but
Mortal Kombat being in Game Pass would be incredible.
It is currently, but it's only Mortal Kombat X 10. Yeah.
I'm just saying all of the Mortal Kombats in general would be excellent.
That would be cool.
How many of like the old Doom games are in there? Or is Duke Nukem on there?
No. Well, those aren't owned by these studios. That's 2K.
I'm just saying that. I was just wondering if any of those games were even on Game Pass.
No. The Doom 2016 was, but it dropped out right after I think you beat it or something like that. Yeah, remember you beat it and then it dropped out of Game Pass.
Doom 2016 I played. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, moving on. Next story. So a leak has come up about Tomb Raider, the Ultimate Experience. So this was originally trademarked by Square Enix in 2018, but it was renewed recently. But some artwork leaked, and I've got a picture of it up here for us, and it says Tomb Raider, the Ultimate Experience. Relive Lara's greatest adventures in one ultimate package coming August 27th. So we don't have any official confirmation, but this is a pretty convincing leak when you combine it with the trademark filing. What's interesting is the artwork shows what looks like a PS1, PS2 era Lara Croft, a 360 era Lara Croft, and then Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, those top-down shooters.
Yeah, I played that with Spencer.
So I wonder if this is going to include everything prior to the reboot in 2012 when they rebooted it? So
I think so.
It would be, if it was $60 for every game going all the way back to the original Tomb Raider, all the way up through the Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light and Lara Croft and the whatever of Osiris, Tomb of Osiris, that would be pretty interesting, especially if it's a attractive price point, like $30 or $40. To get that many games and be able to play them on current gen systems,
that'd be pretty cool.
I don't think you can play most of these games except for the ones that are on backwards compatibility from 360. Yeah. A lot of them are trapped on the PS1 and PS2.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I don't know. This is another example of something that all depends on price point. And also, if this is true, this truly has been the year of remasters and re-releases. Like, it just never ends.
Yeah.
In fact, our next two stories are about remasters and re-releases. So let's just move on. Next up, Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning has been delayed. And this is the least significant delay I've ever heard of. It's being, well, not really, but it's August 18th delayed to September 8th. So it's basically only delayed like three weeks.
A few weeks, yeah.
The biggest news, though, and I wish Spencer were on the show this week to talk about it, is this is the first time that a game is getting remastered and re-released, and they're adding new DLC to the old game. So in 2021, this is going to get new DLC called Fatesworn. We don't have a date, a price, or what it'll include. We just have the name. But they're re-releasing a game, and they're going to further expand on the game with new DLC, which is a great way to get people that already bought the game into it even further, or just bring in new fans of the franchise.
Yeah, that brings in people that maybe people who are like, well, I don't know if I will get it, even if they did like the game a lot. Or I don't know if I'll play it again. But this gives them a kind of a chance, like, oh, wow, something new for me to play. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, so I think they also, to the pre-orders, they've now added a version you can pre-order that includes, like, the Fatesworn DLC included in the purchase. I think I heard it was only $10 extra. I don't know if that's true, though. If so, that's a pretty decent price, depending on how big the DLC is. And obviously, we don't know anything about it yet. But I think it's really cool to bring DLC to something that's old.
I wonder what it will look like, too.
Yeah, especially
is it going to be same engine, or is like can they just like reuse the old like code and files and programming to just make a new DLC on the same level of like graphics, or if it's going to be something that like looks different or newer?
You know, we actually talked about 2 weeks ago, the last time you were on the show, something like this that just happened in Microsoft's world, because they're adding cosmetics to multiplayer for Halo Combat Evolved on Master Chief Collection, which is adding new content to a game that's 20 years old.
Yeah, I don't usually play Combat Evolved if I'm on the Master Chief Collection, so I can't really speak to like what it all looks like. But I think I have kind of like seen it on like different like groups on like Facebook and whatnot, but. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. I don't see any reason why not. If you want to, money off of it, yeah,
yeah. So Halo 3 is coming to PC a couple days from now. I think it's 2 or 3 days after we're recording. They've been slowly releasing all the Master Chief Collection on PC one game at a time. What's interesting is the same day it comes out on PC, they're also updating the console version, and they're upgrading Halo 3 from its 360 version, and they're adding, they're changing Forge to add new items that you can place in Forge, and they're expanding the Forge budget. So they're expanding everything that you can do for the people that play Forge in Master Chief Collection, which is another example of reinvesting in something.
So freaking much, like in Halo Reach. Oh my goodness. The Halo Reach Forge, I spent so much time inside of it. It's ridiculous.
I think the only one I played Forge on was Halo 3. Halo Reach had Forge. Halo 2 have Forge on the Master Chief Collection?
That is a good question.
I thought they might have added it as a weird Frankenstein's monster thing they added to the game, but I might be like having
part of the anniversary.
No, not as part of the anniversary. When they added it to PC, I thought I heard they were adding Forge, but I could be in a fever dream right now just making that up.
Possibly.
I do have a cold, so
yeah, I was probably seeing things.
And the third remaster that I talked about is Mafia got remastered, or is delayed, and it was originally supposed to come out August 28th, and they're delaying it to September 25th. They said it's due to difficulties developing stuff during the pandemic.
Yeah.
COVID-19. Yeah, I mean, I'm never mad at a game when it delays. I'm more mad when I get a game and it's so buggy I can't play it. So delay as much as you have to until your game's ready. I'll never complain about a delay.
Yeah.
I only have one quick hit for us this week, and it's just more of a note. And we got confirmation a week or two ago that the Xbox Game Showcase is happening on July 23rd. Since then, in the Halo Weekly update, they confirmed that Halo Infinite will be revealing the campaign. I don't know if that was a question in your mind, but some people were worried they would only show multiplayer and focus on that too much. So we did get confirmation that the reveal is going to be the story and the campaign for Halo Infinite.
Yeah, I know it seems to me like a lot of people more care about the story of Halo anyway, because Halo's lore is so like expansive now anymore. Because I mean, the game, it's been out for almost 20 years, Halo as an IP. So I know in a lot of like the groups, like, hey, like I'm in like a Halo group on Facebook, and people are always talking about like the story. And then you all have the people who care about the story a lot, and then the people who care about the multiplayer a lot. I think we know, like, we know what we're going to get with multiplayer. It's going to be Halo, but we'll see what the story looks like and if it's enough to like keep people engaged in the lore.
Yeah, I'm more interested to see what they do as far as like Warzone was something I feel right. like they leaned too heavily into for Halo 5. Oh no, I'm talking about the they had something called Warzone, and it was like, it's almost like big team battle, like with AI mixed with the other team.
Do you think Infinite will include a battle royale game mode? Like,
I feel
Warzone
like they're
in Call of
Duty? Oh no, they said it won't. They said no battle royale already.
That's kind of sucks.
So I don't know. I always thought Warzone was, it really just felt like a way to extract money from me to get me to buy rec packs. And so I never really played much of it. I was more of a core arena multiplayer person.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if it's in there, it never took away from the game for me, because the arena multiplayer was there if I wanted to play it. The Warzone thing was just an extra thing on the side. It was almost like I have Call of Duty multiplayer and zombies is off there to the side. And if I don't want to play one or the other, I can just play whatever I want. It existing, because it didn't replace the original multiplayer, it didn't affect me in any way, shape, or form. But I am interested to see if they lean more into it or more away from it, if that's something that they rework, or I am curious what they do there. But to be honest, I more care about what direction the campaign and the story take than the multiplayer. It's like you said, I have faith that multiplayer is going to be good.
Yeah. Yep. I think we know what we're going to get with Halo for the multiplayer portion. We'll see if Sprint stays inside of it.
I think, yeah, Sprint. I actually don't mind Sprint being in it. Yeah. I know it changes Halo what Halo used to be, but it does feel slow when I go back and play multiplayer on Combat Evolved. It just feels archaically slow compared to modern shooters. And it's fun to have the nostalgia of it, but a current gen game playing that slow just wouldn't feel right to the younger generations that are used to faster games.
Quicker gameplay. I agree.
Well, final note this week, Game Pass games, there hasn't been a huge announcement except for Carrion, the game where you play as the monster. They call it I think it's called a reverse horror game where you play
like
as the monster.
Jason or like Friday the 13th or whatever, that game that came out where you can play as Jason.
Well, sort of, except for this is like a side-scrolling 2D game play as a monster, but it's like really like blood-soaked, like you need to look at it because, it looks kind of like you're playing as like this zombie. It's not a zombie. It's really hard to describe this.
I'll look it up.
But it's a side-scrolling, scary game, but you're playing the monster instead of the people running from the monster. So it's got an interesting twist on it. It comes out July 23rd, and it's going straight into Game Pass. So no barrier to entry if you already have Game Pass. And the other tease was the Xbox Game Pass Twitter account tweeted out just the word Yakuza Kiwami 2, which has to mean that that game is coming to Game Pass very soon. Otherwise, why would the Game Pass Twitter account tweet that? And they had previously had Kiwami 1 and one of the other Yakuza games on Game Pass. And we had confirmation from XO19 last year that all of the Yakuza games, or like three or four of them, were eventually going to come to Game Pass. So it just makes sense that this is coming sometime very soon. I expect it'll probably come within the next week to week and a half. So if you recently played through Kiwami 1, Kiwami 2 will be here just in time for you to jump into that.
All right.
That is all the news I have this week. It was a very heavy Ubisoft week. All I take away from this is I have a lot of stuff I want to get done off my backlog before we hit like September. Because come September, it's like nonstop new releases every week to 2 weeks until the end of the year.
I'm excited. This fall seems like it's going to be one of the biggest in a while.
Yeah, and it's great because like there's no barrier to buying games because almost all the big games are supporting smart delivery, so you can start playing on Xbox One and carry it over to Series X.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I remember last generation, I actually passed up getting Assassin's Creed Black Flag and waited 2 weeks for the Xbox One version to come out. And I really wanted to play it at launch, but I had to wait 2 weeks, and now I wouldn't have had to have done that if things were handled the way they were now.
Yep.
Well, looking forward, so we've still got the Xbox reveal event on the 23rd. I think that's the next big E3 replacement thing. And then there's not much between now and then in the way of like E3 style events. But also Spencer's gone at least the next two shows after this, so episode 102 and 103, and I think he'll be back for 104. But he'll be getting settled into his new house and stuff, and I can't wait to have him back on the show. I told him at his wedding I was really going to miss him, not just on the podcast, but just hanging out in general.
Gone, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I've gone 3 weeks without talking to Spencer in like 6 years.
I'm sure he'll text you.
Well, I don't want him to. It's his honeymoon. Right. I know at the end of it, he's going to another wedding. He's actually ending his honeymoon going to another wedding.
Yeah.
But we wish him the best and hope he's having fun.
Yep. Yes, we do. I'm sure he is. Although it sounds
and
to me
you're
like
gonna
today
have
he
to
was
sign
texting
off
me about his like getting eaten up by mosquitoes because he's in Florida.
Yeah, that's true. The first part of his honeymoon is in Florida. They were originally supposed to go to Europe.
Yeah,
but
Germany
the flights,
or Austria. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not taking flights from US now, so he had to redo it. I'm interested to see how you're going to handle signing off this week, because there's been a big change in your life. So let's get straight to it. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton, and I'm now streaming on Twitch. I don't stream every night, but when I do, it's usually between 8 p.m. and 8 p.m. and midnight Eastern at twitch.tv/TimJ22.
And then my name is Gus Harden. You can no longer follow me on Twitter because I did, in fact, deactivate mine.
He deleted his Twitter, guys.
I was completely deleted it. I was just fed up with Twitter in general. It never seems to be like positive or anymore for the most part. Maybe I'm following the wrong accounts or whatnot, but I couldn't do it anymore. It seemed like a lot of the stuff, it was just always the same thing. I have other ways of getting my news anyway. So you can follow my Instagram though, at August_Harden. That's the change. The only change that's really relevant right there, if you really want to, but cause that's where I post life updates anyway. So, that's my send off now, I guess. Follow my Instagram.
Very interesting. Let me ask you this. Is there any video game content on your Instagram?
No. It's more like a life thing. Like I use it for life stuff. So, which is kind of what I did for Twitter anyway. I hardly ever really actually tweeted. I was only like recently getting back into actually tweeting, but I mean, it was whatever. So it was most of the time it was just like me retweeting the Multiform account I only really used it for memes anyway, for the most part, but even the memes weren't even really that good. I get all of those from like, Instagram, Facebook, Reddit,
Gus takes
wherever.
His meme game very seriously.
I do. I am a meme lord, as you might say. So.
Okay, well, that's it this week. Thanks for listening.
Alrighty.
See you next week.
New episodes of Multiform post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice.